want to bring up a tweet I saw. I follow a guy named John Mappin on Twitter. I want to follow this tweet here. He's reporting from Switzerland. This guy's a brilliant businessman and has insights and a family that has been in the political realm longer than we've been a country. So give it a context. But he says, the game is up. The leaders of our world now know that the injections are lethal and have maimed millions.
Man.
They are extremely concerned that their own families have been poisoned and maimed. There is consensus that justice must be served. Yep. And every Reawaken America event that we speak at, everywhere we go, people say the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's like the earth itself is crying out for justice. Yep. I want to play his video he filmed in Switzerland a few days ago.
Well, a very good morning to you from sunny Switzerland. And just to report in on some of the extraordinary meetings that we've been having here over the last week or so with the leadership of Europe, and not just Europe, internationally. Of course, people come to this part of Switzerland from all over the world, and some of the meetings here have been extraordinary. What I can tell you is that almost without exception, people here are totally aware that the injections that have been doled out very liberally to the populations of various different countries are lethal and have been maiming people in the millions. And people here are very, very concerned indeed, very, very concerned that their families really have been poisoned. And those people who we've spoken to that have been injected now thoroughly regret having received this toxic concoction that pharma has managed to persuade, really, millions and millions of people to put into their bodies. Now, the tide is definitely turned. People are starting to realize that, the media, they don't trust the media at all. They're talking to each other about this constantly, really, and it's been the topic of conversation up here in Switzerland. But I just wanted to let you know, for those of you out there that have been campaigning, for those of you out there that have known all along that these injections were toxic, you are thoroughly vindicated. They are indeed toxic. They are indeed lethal in many cases. And they should, of course, be immediately withdrawn from the market. Anyway, it's a stunning day out here in the Swiss Alps. And we wish you well, and do detox the body in whatever way you can. It's worth it.
Mm. You know, in a world where it's easier just to kind of keep your mouth shut, look away, and kind of take care of business, some people tend to say, you know, I can't look at evil and not call it evil. Yep. I can't say 2 + 2 = 5, no matter how many mainstream media outlets force me to try to do that. So here at the Flyover Conservative, we're not in the Swiss Alps.
No. Nope.
We're in the Alps of Missouri, otherwise
Kansas
known as,
City, Missouri.
As the Smoky Mountains. But really thankful to have with us all the way from across the pond, Mr. John Mappin.
Yay!
Well, what can I say? Thank you so much. Very, very honored, David and Stacey, to be on your show. And you may not know this, but you're very popular in the United Kingdom. So when you do come over here, do come and stay at Camelot Castle. We'd love to receive you. And we can actually do a broadcast here from the Round Table itself. This is the home of King Arthur and probably great birthplaces of freedom. And Camelot Castle has become something of an icon for those people that just believe in free speech, really. And we do speak freely. But thank you.
I'll tell you, that, just so everybody knows, that is not a green screen behind him. He is currently at the castle. And it is absolutely beautiful. We've seen some videos. Tell us a little bit about that, John.
As castles go, I would give that one a 10. I would give it. It's one of the. It's one of the nicer castles of anybody we've had on the show.
Well, you're very kind.
It makes Mar-a-Lago look like a, you know, just some kind of a, you know, servant's quarters.
No, Mar-a-Lago is fabulous, and all the Winter White House is it was built to be the Winter White House, of
course. Correct. Mm-hmm.
But no, Camelot, we acquired it actually 20 years ago or just over 20 years ago, because we realized that the mainstream media couldn't be trusted to inform the general public as to what is truthfully going on. And I thought your introduction about that we're seeing a worldwide pattern, of course, the deep state has been using the entire chessboard. Every country on earth. I mean, who would have thought that a lab leak in China would be used to rig an American election? This was incredibly clever, really, when you think about it, as a ploy to get in the postal votes, to ensure, I mean, I'm sure all of us can remember when we saw that very funny sort of dogleg graph that occurred in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden, you know, Trump was in the lead. And then all of a sudden, these votes came in that was sort of 90% in Biden's favor, which is unheard of, even in, I would say, third world electoral procedure. You know, but clearly the deep state had thought it through. And what I realized is that they have been using the whole chessboard. And so having grown up in Switzerland, really, I would, I have to confess, among the so-called elites, you know, my family, to some degree went, you know, they lived overseas, and I grew up in Switzerland, and I happened to grow up, for my sins, around what I would call the sort of billionaire class. And these are the people who are making these decisions and so on and so forth. So I was very interested to go there this February, and I spent a month there talking to these families. And the truth of the matter is, generational wealth means very little if your grandchildren and your children have been sterilized.
Wow.
Such a great point. So true.
That's sobering.
You may think that, well, I'm looking after the family trust for future generations. But if your future generations have literally been sterilized, you have got a problem. And the entire purpose of your existence, you suddenly call into question. And this was how I found my childhood acquaintances. The other thing that I found over there was that the local doctor's list of those families that had asked for fake vaccine passports reads like the who's who of international business.
Wow.
And so clearly, clearly, all the heads of the pharma companies, which of course live in Switzerland, in particular live in this particular little village, is called Stad in Switzerland, which has more sort of billionaires per square inch than probably even Palm Beach. It is these people clearly knew. And the heads of the media groups, the heads of the large newspaper groups. And this local doctor has a list of all these families who asked for the fake vaccine certificates. And apparently this list reads literally like the who's who of big business. So some of these people clearly knew, but then some of these people didn't know. And they now know that they have been poisoned. They've all been getting sick. I have two family members, one of which has gotten cancer. He's younger than me. Other family members, you know, out of respect, I'm not going to say who, but they are very, very sick indeed. And these are people who basically were injected three or four times. There's no question, you know, I've also met with doctors who are at the top of their field. I flew into London, Dr. Malone. And Dr. Ryan Cole, who I'm sure you're with.
A couple Definitely of the best minds in the world.
Well, they, I mean, Dr. Malone and Dr. Ryan Cole, they are, they there are no greater authorities than the harms that mRNA has been doing. And I held a meeting at the Carlton Club, which is the epicenter of conservative thought in the UK. This is where all the MPs go. It's their local drinking place where they go to. And several MPs came along, and they left that room in no doubt whatsoever that they have poisoned the nation. And what is remarkable to me is even today in the House of Commons, members of our government are standing up and making less of those brave MPs, and there are a few. Andrew Bridgen is probably leading the field in this country. Many of you will be familiar with his speaking out on the matter. And they're still not accepting the fact that what we are looking at is a mass genocide. That is what has occurred. Now, it's a slower genocide than some other forms of genocide, but genocide, nevertheless, it is. Mm-hmm. And so when I went to Switzerland, I'd had a dinner the night before, and I thought, you know what? I've just got to communicate this, and that's the thing to do. Yes, that's Andrew Bridgen there. You put him on the screen. A marvelous, mm-hmm. marvelous fellow. And I just think that if we don't stand up now, and if we don't demand justice from those people who are in a position to deliver it, and you know, I'm always somebody that says we must work within the law. I never suggest anybody, takes matters into their own hands or, right. or anything of that nature. We have to, if we don't like the law, we still just about have the mechanisms to change the laws. Mm-hmm. Will we have them for long if we don't act now? You know, we just about have the mechanisms to change the laws, which is why your next election is so important.
Yep.
It's vital that mm-hmm. sensible people in your country
It's critical that people that are mm-hmm. in a position of power speak up. It's important for people that are not in a position of power to use their voice the best they can. Mm-hmm. We're in a place, and we see often in this show, again, people in the United States were hoping Donald Trump would come in and do 80 million things to save it and fix all of our problems. The real answer is 80 million people doing one thing each day mm-hmm. to save their own country. It's everybody doing their part. But I have tremendous respect for someone like yourself who has more at risk with reputation, mm-hmm. with standing in certain circles, that there is a lot to risk. There's people here that, you know, have a job that they could probably replace and find something similar, but didn't want to make waves and just went along, you know, with things. And when I see someone like yourself, it reminds me of Donald Trump here, mm-hmm. because it's like, You ran in that circle, but chose to stand out and speak up. Another person that seems to do it, and people fall on each side of the coin on this, is Elon Musk. You put out a tweet a few days ago of Elon's reply to a thread. And I want to put that on the screen real quick, because it's interesting. You tweeted this out. You said, Elon responded in this thread, and you retweeted it. But he said, they should at least have mentioned that the clinical trials didn't check for transmission blocking. And here's what he was replying to. In the thread, it says there was no evolution of the science. Many scientists worldwide knew that the vax mm-hmm. does not stop transmissions. By spring, summer of 21, the 2020 clinical trials did not check for transmission blocking. And that's basically a retweet of CDC spokesperson. I'd like to play that clip real quick if we could.
All right, so that was a CDC director, Rochelle Walensky. What's your thought on that, John?
Well, I just don't think we're being strong enough in as individuals in speaking out about the gross nature of the truth that has mm-hmm. now come out. And what I think about Elon is very interesting. I'm not sure that I philosophically we would agree on everything. I'm not sure I agree on some of the approaches that he's taking to climate. Although recently he's been talking a lot more sense in that area. Mm-hmm. But I think we have a great debt to Elon for reopening Twitter. You know, and by, I mean, my Twitter account was censored. I had a Twitter account and three weeks before the American election, because I think Twitter knew that I had a lot of followers from the Trump base, they just closed my account down. And, you know, I lost 176,000 followers in those days. I think it's about 150,000 followers in those days. But that was just lost. And then Elon restored my account within a few weeks of acquiring Twitter.
Mm-hmm. This conversation today probably would not be taking place without his stance on that. And I would probably promise you that the, you know, tweets like we just shared probably wouldn't have stayed on that platform without him. So,
yeah, there's virtually nothing that I tweet out on a daily basis today that would not have been removed by the previous Twitter incarnation. So, and that's not to say that Elon would agree with everything I tweet, but I think his puritanical or purist view on free speech is so right and so important. Mm-hmm. And frankly, whatever other errors he has made or will make, he gets a very, very good pass in my book for the restoration of free speech. Also, and I think this is a new issue that he's highlighted, his position on AI is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's a major concern.
Yeah, and in fact, I was speaking to a friend of mine the other day called Ava Vladingerbroek, who ran the protests in Holland with the tractors. They're going in.
Yes,
she's a young Dutch girl. Mm-hmm. She's really fantastic. Have her on your show, really. She has called for an international symposium on the subject of AI. And I think that's a very, very, very good idea, because I think the threat, imagine if, or when really, these social media operations are actually run by AI. It's already a nightmare with big tech, trying to get through to anybody on the helpline. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if I've ever tried to get hold of anybody at Twitter or Facebook. You know, somebody cancels a tweet or something and you go, well, hang on, that's not fun. And you say, well, where's the phone number I can call? There's nobody there. No. So imagine when this is AI. Mm-hmm. And, you know, funnily enough, after I saw his interview with Tucker the other
night. That was a great interview.
Which is a great interview. I wondered, are we already being run by AI?
It's a great
because
question.
Things are going so badly in the world. And I genuinely think, and I mean this from the heart of my consciousness, 2024 is this planet's last chance. Mm. If freedom doesn't win in 2024, you know, may the Lord have mercy on our souls, because I genuinely believe that this is one of the last chances for freedom. And as I say, people like you guys, David and Stacey, my gosh, it is so valuable, because it's not just about the Trumps and the Tuckers and the Elons. It's about very, very ordinary, down-to-earth people. And it's about our skill to communicate to them in a way that they can understand, to be able to simplify the message. Of course, you know, it's so important to be able to tell the right story and to use the entire chessboard. Mm-hmm. The enemy most certainly is organized in that regard.
The overreaching and unified voice of mainstream media does immobilize the average person, because they feel like, I hear this so much, this must be just the way it is now. There's nothing I could do about it. My one little voice does not make, you know, a difference. They don't understand that a single match can start a giant forest fire, but every single voice is important. And that is what I think we talk about. Elon Musk has done a lot to push back on, because if I had 95 people out of 100 all tell me that 2 + 2 = 5, it doesn't make it true. That right. just makes it the consensus, but consensus doesn't equal truth at all. You retweeted this, and I think it's actually, I laughed really hard when I first saw this little battle going on between Elon Musk and first NPR here in the United States, National Public Radio, called them state-funded media, and they did the CBC, and they pushed back, and they're like, well, we receive less than 70% of our funding from the government. So he goes, okay, it's less than 69% government funded media. And he kind of changed their status on there, because people should identify. Like if I'm doing if I'm speaking and I'm a surrogate for a president, you know, I'm speaking on behalf of them. Right. You should know that's my role. And so he's just properly identifying them as they are, clearly. And I think the lack of self-awareness is what jumped out at me, because everybody saw NPR mm-hmm. in the United States as state-funded media. They were like the marketing arm of the Democratic extreme left. And I'd like to get your comment on that. And
well,
that does give us a chance to be able to have a more honest conversation, even if it's just the little labelings like this kind of plant mm-hmm. a seed in people's mind of...
Well, kind of like Trump did with fake news.
Yeah.
You know, like when he did that, people were like, that is true. Before he ever said that, I don't think people really thought about it. But then once he said that, people were like, that is true. That's not real news.
You gave him a language. If you eliminate the word rebellion and you know, language, then people can't rebel. Mm-hmm. But you present the word rebellion and all of a sudden, hey, that now it's a possibility. Fake news is now a thing. And I laugh at this because it's really clever.
Well, and I think that's something that perhaps is Elon's greatest gift, apart from all of his technical geniuses as a rocket whiz kid, which we saw, of course, the rocket we saw go up today, and that was spectacular. But it's his humor. And what we realized is that by crushing and suppressing humanity, the first group of people that actually got crushed were the comedians.
Mm. Yes.
And it
yes.
must have been really awful, if you think about it, to be, how can you possibly be a politically correct comedian?
No kidding.
Good jokes rely on being able to spot something that is an anomaly.
Yes.
And, you know, laughter is actually a form of rejection. You're rejecting the anomaly. You see mm-hmm. some fellow with a funny walk, and if it's Charlie Chaplin, because it's such a funny walk, you start laughing because you're sort of rejecting the...
Right.
You sort of think, oh, well, that's not how people really walk. Well, if you were a comedian on the left... of which most of them, it seems, are, they've really become very unfunny indeed. And there's, mm-hmm. I think Elon has actually proven to be the funniest fellow on earth. He really is absolutely hilarious. And he's actually, I rather suspected he might be a part British because his humour is so dry.
Yeah.
And he really has a very British sense of humor. Most people in America don't always get my jokes when I come to America.
Well, there's a cleverness to it with him being yeah. South African. We had on a composer named Stephen Hilton the other day. He's mm-hmm. famous. He's done, you know, many you know, big major motion pictures and stuff. And he's kind of waking up to like, hey, this isn't what I said. And he says things in a way. Ricky Gervais is another one that you get away. Who'd we have on the lady the other day from?
Oh, Katie Hopkins.
Katie Hopkins. We had Katie Hopkins on the other day. Like, oh,
yeah.
But there's a way of positioning things with British humor, with the accent that softens it a little bit.
That
you can go further than you could if you were, you know, mm-hmm. a regular American comedian. And I think that's so necessary right now.
It is.
You can be rude about somebody in an extremely mannerly way.
Yes.
Yes.
And, They sort of think you're being well-mannered, but they finally realize that actually at the end of it, there's a punchline.
Yes, right. you don't feel insulted until 2 days later.
And you're the butt of the joke.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, Elon has this amazing, and of course, he went on Saturday Night Live, and I think it would have been funnier, if it wasn't such a lefty-dominated
right.
show.
Yes.
But the whole of Hollywood really has been hijacked by the left.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how the freeing up, I think we're actually witnessing the sort of the peeling of the onion of free speech around the world. And once it gathers momentum, and once people remember what a really good belly laugh is like.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, the anomalies that we're looking at, even with, dare I say it, the genocide, if it wasn't genocide, I mean, you really shouldn't say this, but it would be, well, it's not funny, but I mean, it would be funny because, I mean, you are looking at something that is just so ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how on earth did we, as intelligent beings that love our families, agree to inject babies with lethal toxins?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is so revolting that you can't laugh about it. But
yeah.
But really, we need ridiculous. To start realizing the yeah. value of. I don't really. I'm getting mm-hmm. myself into trouble here, but.
It's hard to even talk about because you have to be mentally restricted even how you describe this right now, and that creates that clumsy awkwardness.
Mm-hmm.
It's like doing a roast, mm-hmm. you know, like a funny thing for yep. Kim Jong Un or something, you know,
because
it's like, well, mm-hmm. I got to tell jokes, but I can't say anything that could possibly offend him because he'll kill me.
Right.
You know, it's mm-hmm. it'd be like being on his cabinet and you're the court gesture. It's like, mm-hmm. well, that's a little bit like what the world has become. You know,
you can even look at masks that way. That let's just take it even like you look at masks and you look at the ridiculousness of a mask that somebody actually would wear a mask into a restaurant because they're required to wear it into a restaurant. But as soon as they sit down, they can take that mask off because now they're okay because they're sitting down while they're eating. But as soon as they stand up to go to the restroom or leave the restaurant, they have to put their mask back on. Like, that is so ridiculous.
And they don't believe it, but they want to make sure that you know that they know that you know that they really care about what you think.
Yeah, I mean, it's preposterous.
It is preposterous. And there was one hilarious story. There's a fantastic satirical cartoonist over here called Bob Moran. And he came to stay with me the other day. He has Bob's Cartoons is his thing.
Okay.
And he told me a story at the very early when they first put in the masking protocols. You had to, as soon as you stood up in the restaurant, you had to put your mask back on.
Yeah.
So he was in a cafe and he crawled on all fours to pay without a mask.
That's hilarious.
And everybody in the restaurant, it was absolutely hilarious. But the woman in charge of the restaurant was furious.
Oh my gosh.
Well, hang on a second. I thought above 3 feet, the virus was not.
Yeah.
I thought that's why it was. That's
Bob. Oh, there he is.
He is somebody with an extraordinary wit. If you don't follow him, he is
good. We'll put the link to his Twitter feed down below. It's yeah. Bob Moran, and then it's @Bob's Cartoons on Twitter. John, and, I got to thank you for coming on.
Yes.
Thank you for what you're doing. Thanks for speaking up. You're a bright light, and mm-hmm. you know, granted, we're in different countries, but I think we have more in common. By locking arms and speaking truth mm-hmm. against those in power. And truth always ages really well. And yeah. I think when this story's done, you're going to be listed as a hero mm-hmm. of this era. And I'm glad to know you and I'm proud to have had you on the show.
Well, that's what we say. Truth is like a fine wine. It does improve with age. And God bless you both. You are, if I've offended anybody who's watching, by the way, jolly good job.
Good.
You probably needed to be offended.
That's
yes,
right.
Perfect.
That's exactly
John, thank
right.
you so much.